Welcome, everybody, to the 15 Years Later podcast. I'm Mike Wilden, here with the Reverend Tim Larson.
I am the Reverend Tim Larson. We don't usually start that way, but that's definitely true. If you read the blog, you know why that's true. And hey, that's where we are.
Surprise.
You threw me with that one. Thank you for that. But it's apropos to what we've been doing.
I remember not too long after you got ordained, the movie group, like a day or two later, you showed up as the Reverend Tim Larson. So that always cracked me up. So today we're going to be talking about, what's that?
I said, that's a thing. That's true. I am the Reverend Tim Larson.
And we'll get into that a little bit, later. But yeah, so today we're here to talk about your article, Why Am I Doing This?
Yes.
But before we get to that, real quick, we just want to say, first of all, thank you again to everybody that's been reading and listening. We really put a lot of work into this, and it means a ton that people are actually following along and enjoying our story, you know, as we tell it.
We're hearing good things, and we really appreciate people who are saying that. I know people like say things to be nice. Hey, I read your thing or whatever. We're hearing some nice things that people are enjoying following our story. And man, it means a lot. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys for reading. Thank you guys for listening and letting us know that you're enjoying it. We appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, it was cool. Just the other day, we were at Buffalo Wild Wings just meeting about this thing. And a couple of people you knew walked by, and they just kind of asked, oh, who's this? And oh, yeah, podcast guy.
Yeah.
And you told me later, like, I don't talk to them about that. They just said it.
That's right. I've never had a conversation with them about the fact that we've put this podcast out there. And she was like, I bet that's the podcast guy. And I thought, well, that means that you're paying attention to the podcast because we haven't talked about this. And we kind of looked at each other like, hey, that's cool. Now, we did kind of, this is a little cheap, but we looked at each other like, we just got recognized in public as podcasters, which is completely true, but kind of false because it was one of my friends who just knows through our friendship circle that that's happening. But hey.
It was still pretty cool, though.
Chalk that up in the cool guy category.
Yeah. And just hearing from people that we do know, even, that would just... You know, we put this out there on some of our social media, sure, but, you know, we have our people that we talk to about it.
Yeah.
But then there are also people that we know that are paying attention, and we haven't asked them at all. We haven't even said, like, hey, check out this link. They've just done it, and and they're enjoying it.
Yeah.
That actually leads me to kind of a fun thing. We have we have some comments.
We have comments.
We have comments. All right. We've got one from the WordPress site. We've got one that was emailed to us and one on a social media site. Hey. Just a reminder to anybody, you can always leave us a comment or an email on any of those platforms. We'll get to that later, though.
Yeah, please do. Push us a little. So give us some suggestions for stuff to talk about. That'd be great.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you just want to, you know, if you have any comments about things we've already talked about or you just want to make fun of us, you know, do that too.
Yes.
And we'd be happy to respond.
Wide open. All wide open.
Yeah. So the first one was from the actual website, just a simple one, from Dentino.
Our boy. Yeah.
this was about from baseball to the stage when you talked about the beginning of the baseball stadium tour and you went to Atlanta and saw the Chipper Joneses. So he just said, I remember the Chipper Joneses. They were good.
Yes. Yeah. So Ken works with me. And he was there when you were there at the high school.
Yep.
And, you know, as
I never had him as a teacher, but I got along with him pretty well because he knew a lot of people that I knew. And so we just ended up getting along.
And in the blog, he comes through in a significant way. Maybe that'll come up later in this discussion. Maybe it won't. But I'll tell you something. If we're turning off anybody with this blog because we talk too much baseball, It is not our friend Dentino. He loves baseball on a major scale. And, as we talked about that game seven where we saw Dexter Fowler hit that home run, I guarantee you he knows exactly where he was. And so, yeah. And of course he would remember the Chipper Joneses, because, Atlanta and the Cubs fought back and forth with a whole bunch of things throughout the year. So,
Well, I'll tell you, those 90s
thanks for throwing some
Braves,
stuff out there, Dentino.
yeah, seriously, thank you. We really do appreciate it. I also want to point out we got an email from Steve, Tall Steve, that we brought up a few episodes
Oh
ago.
yeah, rubber band Steve.
That does some, yes.
Rubber band Steve.
So
What do you have to say?
I'm just gonna read this. Hey, Mike and Larson. I figured for how much you threw my name out there in the first two episodes, it was time for an email. Which is
That's
fair.
great.
That's
That's great. Yeah.
well, we're throwing it out a little more today. So thanks for emailing us, Steve. First off, still loving the blog and podcast. Work life has been crazy busy the last 6 weeks, so finally getting a chance to get caught up. Time for episode four, he emailed us just
Okay.
before we put episode four up.
Okay.
I can neither confirm nor deny that I was the one to put the Larson quote on the stupid board. Apparently, that specific action is a little fuzzy 18 years later, but I do remember being thrilled that Larson ended up on the board since I was up there so many times myself. So whether or not I wrote it, I'm sure I was involved with it needing to be on the board. Great times. Keep up the great and entertaining work. From Steve Campbell.
Oh, that's cool. He did send me a message through Facebook just saying that he liked what we were doing. I didn't get that kind of detail out of him. But it does remind me, we did miss an opportunity, because I got on the stupid board for saying it's all funny until a throne gets chaired, right? Like that was the line.
Yes.
And then in one of our recent podcasts, I said something about having a stadium in every hot dog that I've been to. Clearly,
Yep.
my mind has a rhythm of saying things way before I put the words in place. And so I just
Yeah.
do that all the time.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I missed the opportunity myself, but I'm glad that Brian was able to put you on his own stupid board for that
Yeah,
because I.
Brian took care of business there. But hey,
Yeah.
let's make this a goal. Since Steve reached out to us, let's get Steve as a guest on the podcast. I haven't talked to him since he was in high school. Like face to face, I haven't seen
Yeah,
him.
same.
So
Same.
let's make it a point when we're talking when this conversation comes back around somehow to being in my classroom. Let's get Steve in here.
Yeah, I agree. And for the record, this is the 15 years later blog at gmail.com. So he was technically emailing both of us.
Oh
So
yeah. That's yeah, okay.
that's our official one. He didn't just send that to me.
So now we just learned who pays attention to that and who doesn't.
Right. That's okay. I
It's good that
mean,
you're here for that.
we have our roles. That's all good.
That's true. Different strengths. Different strengths.
So the last one I want to tell you, my friend Sarah, longtime friend from a couple of different walks of life,
Okay.
commented on social media. She said, Mike, y'all were talking about the quotes and mentioned the throne gets chaired, and whether it was remembered. And I'm like, damn, I remember Mike telling me the story in college. It's definitely remembered. And she laughed. So. She remembers me telling her back when I was in college, the first round of college, back where I met Mike Hilty at the same place. I told her that story of you saying it's all fun and games till the throne gets chaired. So yeah, I've been on that one for a while.
So you're in college and you're telling other friends from college who have nothing to do with the high school that I work at that you went to. You're like, this ass of a teacher I had said this out loud, and she remembers that. And so, as we're doing
Well,
the
I mean,
podcast, she remembered it, is what you're saying.
yes. I'm sure I was telling people about all the
That's
aspects
great.
of it because I did enjoy that classroom a lot,
Oh, that's
but
cool.
yeah, I told her that. That's I thought that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that a
That's
lot.
great. Well, Sarah, thanks for sending stuff along. Be happy to meet
Thank
you
you.
someday.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. I appreciate it.
Okay, so less official, but I was just talking to one of the guys in the band the other day, and he said that he jumped on and listened to one of the podcasts. He hasn't listened to the first couple, but he just grabbed the last one. And he just wanted to point out that he enjoyed, like the banter. And he said that it's fun that we're putting stuff out there. And he mentioned that it's cool that we're being pretty honest, because it's the one where we said, "Hey, sorry we put this out late because we were drunk and everything." He enjoyed the honesty. He was like, "You guys really aren't holding back. You're just being yourselves, and
Yep.
it's fun to listen to." So, even somebody that's really close to me is listening to this and getting a different perspective of my life through you, Mike. And yeah, so I feel. I like we can't say it enough. Like, thank you guys for listening, and we're hearing you, and we really appreciate you guys encouraging us. And we're gonna keep doing this. We've got a lot of blog episodes coming up, so we got a lot of podcast episodes coming up, and man, we're enjoying it. So thank you guys for supporting.
Let's get into one of those now. So this is episode 6, written by you, titled "Why Am I Doing This?" which is a question I ask myself several times a day. But this is a little more in depth. You've written almost everything in order so far. We've switched around a few of mine when we did our storyboard thing, but I believe this was a response to "On a Plane to Hawaii." I'm not completely sure, but I do remember this was during that time period where I would send you something and then you'd send something right back the next day.
I feel that's right. It feels like the first three that I have posted here are my original first three. We haven't switched up my order yet. We're gonna, but we haven't switched up my order quite yet. I agree with that.
Cool. I gotta tell you, part of the fun of this whole process for me is just continuously reigniting that creative spark, you know?
Okay,
And
yeah,
I know
sure.
a lot, you know, a lot of it for me is just getting started. You know, I've told you several times, getting started is the hardest part of anything for me. You know, just sitting down and actually get, I don't know if it's laziness or anxiety or whatever it is, but getting started is always just so difficult for me. And so before we get into your entry here, I just want to say, like, this project has really allowed me to keep that creative fire burning. And that's part of the fun for me. So as far as for you, you know, I know there are a lot of times I would send you something and you'd send something right back. So clearly something was igniting that for you as well, that just that creative spark, like I keep saying. So what was it about when I would send you something that would get you going, "Ooh, okay, I'm onto something here. I'm gonna start writing." Like, what inspired you so much to write in response back in those early days?
No, I like this question, because this makes me reflect on when we started this. Like we did this, we started this a couple of years ago now, 2 or 3 years ago or whatever. I was really excited about the project still, as I'm writing my third episode here or third blog. When you would send me something, I would see the email like, "Hey, I wrote this. Tell me what you think." I immediately had two thoughts. One, I'm really excited to read this thing. And two, man, I can't wait to write a reaction to whatever he just wrote.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, as you know, I'm a songwriter, so I enjoy when, especially, I hate to say this, but when Nikki's not around and I have the house to myself, I really kind of like that because I can sit at the piano and play without intention. I can just fumble around on the piano and let whatever happens, happens. And that's when some of the best songwriting happens. And I really don't want to do that when she's in the house because she's heard me play for 25 years. Like the poor Nikki has listened to me play the piano in the house for 25 years. Like I don't really want to just get on the piano and just, bumble around for 2 hours and subject her to that. So those moments on the piano when I can sit down and really sort of be expressive and play around with things and run with something that feels good, that's a great creative outlet for me in the middle of a week of teaching kids. You know what I mean? Like I got to be able to do that kind of stuff. So getting back to your question, when I would get your entries, I would really enjoy reading them. Man, I think we got to know each other better through these writing things than we ever did talking at Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, like the stuff that you wrote about your background and filled stuff in, like really made me understand who you are a lot better. Although, of course, I enjoy the Buffalo Wild Wings meetings. I think we both enjoy that. But I would get to know something about you, and then I would plan so that I would do that a little bit later at night. After everything else is done, you know, dinner is over, the night is winding down, or get a glass of wine or something, and I would read yours, and immediately I would just kick into, all right, I'm ready to write something and just be expressive. And so I was excited to get everything you sent because I was learning more about you, and also I get another opportunity to just, you know, be the artist. And I love being an artist.
Same. I mean, that's pretty much perfectly well said. I love writing so much, and I just haven't had an opportunity to do it very much. I guess I haven't found inspiration for it or something like that, but this project really has allowed me to just exercise that muscle, you know what I mean? And it's been great. So yeah, everything you said, I agree 100%. All right, so back to this entry specifically.
Okay.
One of the standout lines in this entry, and I would say throughout this entire story, everyone should have an Aunt Kitty.
Oh, yeah. Well, I believe in that. Everybody should have an Aunt Kitty. Yes.
Yes. I remember when you sent me this one the first time, and you even put that in the email,
Oh,
just
I
as kind of
did.
a tagline. Yeah. And or the text or whatever it was. And I could tell it was very important to you, obviously, to just kind of to state this. But as I've gotten to know you better, and I've spoken to a couple of your relatives through movie group and everything, the legend of Aunt Kitty has just grown for me, you
Sure.
know, and it's really cool seeing that person for you, because everybody has some kind of, some older relative whose light just shines,
Yeah.
whoever's by them. And clearly that was Aunt Kitty for, for you and your family. And it was really cool, because that love for her, and just that bright feeling, that her shining, and the laughter, and like you say, the warmth and the Christmas night from the fireplace. It that it just the love radiates off of the page or the screen or whatever you're reading at that time.
Yeah.
It's great. You can just really tell. Can you just tell me about Aunt Kitty? Tell me
Okay.
about Aunt Kitty.
Absolutely. I'd love to. So on my dad's side of the family, he has, sometimes I gotta count them on my fingers. I believe there are six siblings. And please let that number be right, because if we put this out and that number is wrong, I'm going to hear about it for the rest of my life. But I'd have to name them all to count them. So I'm just going to say there were six. The oldest was a brother, and he married Aunt Kitty. And we just, as kids, you know, I think we were very blue collar in the Detroit area. And there was just a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of hardworking dads, and you know, there's a lot at the time, there's a lot of stay-at-home moms, and so there's a lot of similar nuclear families in the Larson family network. And Aunt Kitty just stands out to me and several, like my brother, my nephew, as just a bit of a matriarch for that environment. And the thing is, she would hate that word so much, but she was just, you went to Aunt Kitty's house and you just, you were welcomed in and you belonged, no matter who you were. So, but here's the thing that made her so incredible is when you were younger and you were too young to really know what reality is, she would let you believe that she could put a curse on you if you were a bad kid. Aunt Kitty wasn't the kind of, mom or aunt that was like, I'm going to tell you no, and you're going to listen to me because I'm the mother and I'm in charge. She would make some shit up that would scare the living bejesus out of you and you would behave. Like that's Aunt Kitty. She was, I was very sure she could put a spell on me. I was sure that she had a cauldron somewhere where she could, put some bat wings in and shit. She could, call down evil spirits. And as a young kid, she just scared the living shit out of you right after she hugged you and made you feel like she loves you. And so that's what makes her so unique, is that she was a character. I mean, she wasn't just a loving person, she was a character. And so she
Right.
had this high-pitched laugh that just made everybody else in the room laugh.
One might call it a cackle.
One might even call it a cackle. And if you did the wrong thing and she yelled your name, she could hit that same high pitch while being angry. And so it'd get you. No matter what room of the house you're in, if she yelled your name, it would get to you, and you would feel it. Oh, she was just a wonderful person to have around when you were a little kid. And as I grew older, and did things like go to college, she just wanted to hear all about it. Like, she didn't want to tell you what you were supposed to do, or where you're going to go next. All she wanted to do was have you come over, and she'd, let you have an apple pie. She was great at apple pie. Oh my God, Aunt Kitty could cook and bake. But she just wanted you to sit around the table and tell you how things were. So that's kind of how she learned. She learned from other people, who came to her sort of central hub, and she loved all of it. Like, she loved you for whoever you were at all times. That's Aunt Kitty. Man, she's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the word I was just going to use. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific stories from childhood or growing up, or just any Aunt Kitty stories from back in the day?
Okay, so here's one. This is quirky, and it's maybe it's not even accurate, but this is what I remember. When we were kids, we used to wear those white, like, you'd call them tube socks. A pair of white socks that went halfway up your calf. And as kids, you'd run around, and they would, as you're running around on the carpet playing, Star Wars or whatever, and running all around and jumping behind furniture, your socks would start to slide off your feet. And a grown-up pulls up their socks when they start to fall down. Kids don't. You just run through it. So then you move on to something else. You're watching TV. And I remember laying on my stomach, watching TV with my socks halfway off my feet. She would run up and tie a knot in your sock. Like, she would, I don't know how she, like, she'd just walk up. Maybe she might, like, step on your butt or your back and make sure you couldn't move. Grab your leg and then tie a knot in your socks, and that was supposed to teach you pull up your socks, idiot. That's just Aunt Kitty. Most anybody else would say, okay, you look like an idiot, pull your socks up. But Aunt Kitty was creative, and like I said, man, she was a character. You had to have your head on a swivel when Aunt Kitty was around.
That's great.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw Aunt Kitty?
Okay, so just this past Christmas, I went into town to see my mom and dad, and spent the night there. And then I was going to see Brian, who lives up in Port Huron area, the Thumb. And Aunt Kitty's kind of on the way there, and I haven't stopped by to see her in quite some time because I'm out of town. When I go in, I see some friends or I see mom and dad, but I haven't gone to see Aunt Kitty in quite some time. So I made it a point, especially knowing that I wrote this and we've been talking about it, to stop by and say hi. And she did not disappoint. There was the immediate smile. The immediate hug. She gave me some lectures. And then she just wanted to hear once again what I've been up to. And it was just like, it was like no time had passed at all. Like that's basically, that's what it's like. No time passed at all. Oh, I'm glad you stopped by. What have you been doing? As if I just saw her on Tuesday. It's just delightful. I didn't get a cackle. I tried. I made some jokes and she giggled, but I didn't quite get a cackle.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great, man. Good for
Yeah.
you. Did you tell her that you are now the Reverend Tim Larson?
You know, I did. I did. I wrote this and I wrote the ending. Like, I don't know if I should tell her. And so I couldn't help myself. I actually have a little card in my wallet that says, this guy's a minister. And I showed it to her and I said, you remember you used to call me Father Tim? And she's like, oh, I remember. And I was like, well, I have friends. I got ordained and I'm actually a minister now. She just knows how to. I was doing it as like, hey, it's kind of a joke. I'm not in the priesthood. This isn't a real thing. This is just through the internet. So that it's this kind of thing. She just looked at me and shook her head slowly, said, "Doesn't the Lord work in mysterious ways?"
Awesome. That's so
Yeah.
cool, man. I'm so
Yeah.
glad you got to do that.
So I think she really enjoyed it. She kind of
Well, I
lit
know
up at
you
that.
were. That's fantastic. I know you were talking about telling her. I mean, pretty much since you wrote this article, or I keep calling it article, since you wrote this entry, you've been talking about, oh, I really hope I get to tell Aunt Kitty about this someday. I can't wait to tell Aunt Kitty. I don't know if I should tell Aunt Kitty. I mean, you would talk
Right.
about what happens if Aunt Kitty finds out that I'm ordained now, for a good a couple of years.
Honestly, I figured she'd double down and tell me to quit teaching and get right into that clergy. Like that was always the direction that conversation went. And she didn't. She just looked at me and gave me a nice subtle guilt trip that the Lord works in mysterious ways. And I
She
got there in the end.
took her victory.
Yeah,
She
that's right.
accepted her victory.
That's right. I say in
That's
this
great.
article, nobody was happy. Aunt Kitty wasn't happy. And I think she kind of, she there was a little glint in her eye. She was like, yep, I knew it
Yeah.
the whole time.
Got it. Gotcha.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
I think Aunt Kitty wins all things like that in the end. Like she'll wait 40 years, but she'll win in the end. That's Aunt Kitty. And I'll say it again, everybody should have an Aunt Kitty. So hey, so that line,
Everybody.
I'm gonna go back to the Bare Ham Bones for a second. I invited some family to come out on my 40th birthday for the first show of the Bare Ham Bones, right? Mom came out, dad came out, my brother came out, and they brought Aunt Kitty. I called her and said,
Yeah.
would you like to come out and see this? I mean, it's stupid. You don't have to. And she said the same thing that she said when I got married and I invited her. I called her and said, hey, it's going to be out of town. And if you'd like to come, I'd love if you're there, but I understand if you can't travel. Her response is the same thing every time. I will be there with bells on. That's what Aunt Kitty says if you invite her to something. So she shows up, does the 5-hour drive, which I'm sure she was ornery by the end of that, threatening to put curses on people. But she was in the crowd, and that's the first time I said it. I played something, and I think I swore. And so after I swore, I apologized to Aunt Kitty from the stage because I knew she was in the crowd. I was like, Aunt Kitty, I'm sorry that I swore. And I was like, that's my Aunt Kitty right back there. And I could see her doing like a don't stop that. Nobody needs to look over here. Don't point me out. And I pointed, and I was just like, everybody should have an Aunt Kitty. And she told me later that that meant a lot to her. So
Of course, yeah.
everybody should have an Aunt Kitty.
Everyone should have an Aunt Kitty.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, there's another person in this that definitely kind of shaped your path that I know is important to you too here. Of course, we can't mention this without mentioning your mom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
She
absolutely.
It cracks me up in here. You talk a lot about her trying to kind of push you towards becoming a mechanical engineer. And the way you present all that, I've told you several times, cracks me up. Just the, so what do you want to be? A major league baseball player. It just, it's
Well,
such
I
a
did.
kid thing. Well, right, of course. I wanted to be in the NBA when I was little, but you know, I turned out this way, and there was it's so like
You're
that's not gonna
beautiful the way you
happen.
are, Mike. You're beautiful the way you
I
are.
no, I appreciate that, but I'm just not, you know, not really cut out for the National Basketball Association. But no, it was just put in such a kid way, and then her response was such a mom response. You know, I obviously, you know, moms just want to try and push you in the right direction so that you'll be successful. Some are more tactful about it than others, some are more blunt about it than others. It's a little different, but it just cracked me up reading her just like, no, not that. No, not that. No, not that. And then finally, here's what you should do. And you know, I remember when I first told my mom that I wanted to try and be a stand-up comedian, and she kind of had that. My parents have always been so supportive of anything I've done, but that was the one time my mom kind of was like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, mom, I want to try it. And she just went, do you have any, I mean, do you even have any material? Like, yes, mom, what the hell?
I'm funny all the
You know, the question
time.
is that it's, I'm not like, I'm going into the show next week. Yes, I like, I've been preparing for this. But yeah, I think part of that was just, you know, she knew before I did that there my attention was kind of spread for a lot of things. And that's something that if I really wanted to actually succeed at, I'd have to put all of my energy into it. And I just didn't ultimately want to do that. We'll get to that some other time. But yeah, that kind of reminded me of when my mom heard about me wanting to be a comedian. She was like, you know. Was there anything else that you had said that were there? I'll put it this way. Were there any other dreams of yours that she crushed on your way to mechanical engineering school?
As a dream squasher, my mother.
In the story, you lay out a couple, which
I
are
do.
great.
That's
I love
true.
the
That's
conversation.
fair.
I imagine that over time there were probably other things that you might have had in mind here or there. I wasn't sure if
Well, you
what else
know.
did little Tim want to be when he grew up?
Oh, okay. All right. So you're asking two questions. So
I am.
let me address my mom first. Because she's really taken a beating in this one. So our background is, like I said, we're blue collar Detroit, the whole family, really. So there weren't a lot of Larsons that had gone on to college. And to be honest with you, as my parents were growing up in Detroit and the auto industry was so available, a lot of them didn't even finish high school. So there's not a lot of education in our family of bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and all that kind of stuff. So I had the opportunity to do that, and it was kind of new for a lot of us. And so I think what my mom really wanted is to make sure that I didn't screw something up because I've got all that potential in the world, So as an idiot, as a young kid, mom's just doing her best to try and guide me in the right direction. And dad too, they were very supportive about me going to college. But they wanted me to have a plan and didn't want to just have money just being thrown away. And that's fair. But I was an idiot. There's no way around that. So they were trying to supply some guidance there, and it was definitely needed, and I don't know that I was completely ready, And so there's another line coming up that I had a different kind of learning to do, that I think is evident in, these kind of conversations with my mom pushing me.
Well, you know what?
So,
Let's address that.
okay.
We'll come back to Little Tim in a second, because you did write. We actually just put that line in recently when we were kind of doing our final edits for this, you came up with that line weird, because it ended a little abruptly the way that you had it, which it was still fantastic. But I know we both were like, okay, what can we put in there? And that one line I really thought tied everything well together. So what inspired that line to come in, you know?
You know what's funny?
What inspired that line?
I think I meant to have that line in there the whole time. I just didn't know it. You know, like it wasn't until we went to edit this months later that I looked at it and went, oh, this is what I'm missing. I had a different kind of learning to do. You know, the idea of going to college is you finish high school, you get right into college, and you know, you're just successful, and then you get out of college and you're job training ready and you start a career. You know, that's how we
In
all thought of
theory.
it. Yeah, I mean that's how I thought of it as a kid. I know how my parents thought of it. That's how we all thought of it, especially back in the day. I think there's a different take on that now. I just wasn't ready. Maturity wise, dedication wise, I wasn't college material. I was college capable, but I wasn't college material when I graduated high school. I I know this will shock you. I really enjoyed entertaining people around me and finding friends and, you know, having a good time and having time spent with people mean something. But I wasn't really dedicated to that kind of a higher purpose yet in my life. And when I say there was a different kind of learning that I had to do, I think that's what I mean. I just wasn't at a mature place ready to commit to something that was going to take 4 years to do to set up the rest of my life. Like I hadn't figured out the beginning of that yet.
Well, I think that one line is kind of the moral of this story.
Yeah.
You know, why am I doing this starts out as an origin story for you becoming a teacher, and then it just honestly becomes something completely different. And it's not really about you becoming a teacher so much as just getting to the point where you realized, oh, hey, I have to learn something new here. And I think, you know, in fairness to young Tim, I think that's something we all kind of have in common, not just you and me, but a lot of just
Sure.
people that are in their late teens and early 20s, because I was an idiot then too. You remember a few weeks ago when it was, hey, you've got this geography degree, you should maybe check out this cool concentration. Nah, you know, and then I get out of school and that's the only thing that anybody wanted. So yeah, I think that's something that we all have in common. I like to say younger and dumber. Back when I was younger and dumber.
Yeah, I got 150 of them in my
But
classroom right now.
yep.
They're all very sure that they know everything, and they don't.
Sounds like
Yeah.
teenagers to me.
Yep.
So let's go back real quick to young Tim. What were some of those other things that you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh man, I love. I know we overstate this, but I loved baseball so much. I couldn't stop. I went in my backyard and I played baseball by myself. We had a swing that was one of those wooden swings, and I practiced pitching to where I had to hit the smallest little spot on the front of that swing with a tennis ball I would throw so that it would come back to me. And if I missed, I
Nice.
had to run and go get it. And so there was a benefit to throwing it correctly. And I was just imagining, I had imagined batters in a batter's box, and I was throwing to them. And I would hit a wiffle ball and run around bases. I played by myself in the backyard. I probably looked so stupid to the neighbors.
Can I
But
tell you
I was,
something?
yeah.
I did the same thing.
Well, there you go. There you go.
So it was. Part of it was a love for baseball, but part of it for me was just more of the create a player, create a character thing,
Yeah.
you know, just that whole thing. And so I was just living that out physically more than anything. You know, if I wasn't playing a video game or something, like, no, I'm going to go out in the yard and actually do this. And so I would go out there and do the pitches and hit the wiffle ball and just imagine like we're in a game with these players that is made up. And, you know, and sometimes I would keep the stats and everything too of this, like it was just a thing. And then if I were inside, there were times where like I'd have just like a rolled up sock and I would stand a certain distance from a door in a basement or something, and I would just like try and throw the sock in different ways. And then I'd still like, oh, this pitcher is, but and I'd just imagine, oh, they got a hit off that one. And so it's keeping all these imaginary stats and shit. But I did it too. I was out there all by myself, baseball for one.
My imagination ran wild for a lot of my childhood, and I did do artistic things quite a bit. And then I don't know, by the time it was high school was coming to an end, I was obviously very into being social and being part of groups of friends and stuff like that. So I should have spent more time thinking about getting ready for college and going to college and thinking about career stuff, but I just wasn't ready for that. I was in that area of this was a big phrase way back in the day. I was finding myself, and I don't know how many kids use that as an excuse anymore, but I used it pretty hard. I was finding myself, and there's a future episode coming up. There's a second part to this. Why am I doing this? Where I tell the rest of the story, how I got from there into being a teacher. So I don't want to give too much away because we do actually tell the second half of this story later.
So let's just hold off there. The only thing I can remember, obviously the teacher was kind of the thing I settled into in my high school years. I remember for a brief time, my mom had told me when I was like 12 or 13 and I was kind of smarting off to her. I remember her telling me, like, you'd be a really good lawyer for as much as you like to argue. And I took that seriously. And so I actually thought about being a lawyer for like a little bit. But the big one, anybody that knows me, I think is well aware of this. The big one growing up was I wanted to be a paleontologist. I mean, ever since I was like
Oh,
four.
this is back to the dinosaur thing. Love dinosaurs and
Yeah. Big dinosaur nerd.
okay,
Ever
yeah.
I literally as long as I can remember. Some of my earliest memories have to do with dinosaurs. And I've always been fascinated by them. A lot of kids have their dinosaur phase. Mine just never went away. So that's just kind of that's the thing that a lot of people associate with me and associate dinosaurs with me and everything. And but yeah, I remember when I got a little older, I kind of justified not going for paleontology by like, oh, I have to take a lot of earth science classes and everything. And then, well, I'm going to be out in the middle of nowhere, for weeks at a time, very few people around. I think about that today and I'm like,
That sounds
man, I should have become a
great.
paleontologist. Oh, that sounds really nice.
Oh man, that sounds great. So you mentioned lawyer.
But
I think my mom did suggest a couple of times that I could have been a lawyer as well. If I think back, I think she did suggest that, and mostly because of how fiercely I argued the rules of the house. One of the reasons that they thought so, they were very strong-minded about I should go to college. Where, my brother he put in a semester, and he went on to do other things, and he in the auto industry. I don't think my sister took a semester of college right after high school. She also went into the industry. She did take classes later, to go along with her career in the auto industry. But my parents from the beginning were like, you're going to college. And I think it was because I would argue with my mother stuff that I remembered her saying to my brother 10 years ago. Well, then why'd you say this to Chris 10 years ago? You can't tell me that this is against the rules. You told him blah, blah, blah. And I think she would get so
The
frustrated with
decision of
me.
Chris versus Mom of 1980. Yeah, let's see.
Exactly. And I remember
There's
her yelling
precedent.
at one point she said, "Don't tell me what I do with one kid versus the other kid." And I remember thinking, "All right, you're just mad now." Like this, like that doesn't even make sense. But I could tell you're angry, so I'm not going to say the next thing, which I was about to say, because I'm pretty sure that would get my ass beat. So I'm going to say you're right, and I'm going to back off because I had a follow-up to that. I'm not going to say it. But I think she saw that and she was like, Lawyer. My youngest son should be a lawyer. He will not stop busting my hump about rules in the house. And I, same, similar to you with the paleontology thing. In high school, I saw some of the stuff that a lawyer would study. In some kind of social studies class, they were talking about this particular, lawsuit, whatever versus whatever, and this other one. And I was like, I'd have to research all of that stuff and know all of that stuff. I have no desire to do that whatsoever. Like, I just want to argue. I don't want to know things and memorize things. I don't want to do that.
Quick credit to your mother, though. She does, at the end, you kind of show like, hey, you know what? I couldn't have gotten there without mom, and look at how much she brags about it now. And that's kind of the spirit of it, I think, because everybody has that, their mother's nagging them about this or that. It doesn't mean anything personally bad about about anybody's mother. You know what I mean? It's just that's how it goes. That's the mother-son relationship in a nutshell. Where you kind of have that like, the boy just kind of rolling his eyes, barely kind of listening, but then you get older, you go, oh yeah, okay, like.
There's no doubt in my mind that one, yes, you're completely right. I'm not the person I am without my mother's influence. There's no doubt about that. And she's
Same
a
here.
saint. I mean, ask anybody in our family. My mother is a saint. But also, you're right. For all the times that I rolled my eyes at my mother for trying to influence me to act this way or that way, she probably rolled her eyes at me 10 times more. I mean, the amount of patience she showed just to raise me is sainthood in and of itself.
I could say something similar with my mother.
Yeah, moms are great. Moms are great.
Moms are great. Moms are great, and everyone should have an Aunt Kitty.
Indeed.
All right, so let's go back real quick to we're going to do this in kind of reverse order a little bit. You mentioned basically year by year of high school, how you felt. It's just one paragraph. You do a pretty good job of just throwing out a sentence or two about each year. Freshman year, hey, I'm getting A's on the tests. I'm just writing it down. But like you had a different thing. So for senior year, you say you'd rather be somewhere else. And I could say that was me for almost all of high school and a lot of my first round of college, with one very obvious exception, which I think just goes to show that your unique method is, that's proof that your method is effective. Because when I was in your class, I didn't want to be somewhere else. So I think that just goes to show that. But I can totally relate. Just like there were so many times I'm in class, I'm like, ugh, I just don't want to be here. I'd be creating stuff on paper a lot of times, just writing out, my own little fantasy worlds or whatever. And it just, I felt the same way. What was it about math that you understood so much better than, say, whether it was English or history? I'm not saying you didn't understand those things, but why did you connect to math so well?
Okay, as a veteran teacher, I can tell you that a lot of students gravitate towards certain subjects. It just happens. Some kids have to work harder at certain subjects. Like I have math students that have to work harder at it to get the level of success they want. Some of them, it just clicks for them. And you could pick subjects for me like that. I loved English. I actually minored in English and I'm certified to teach English classes. I haven't, but I could. Or better said, the superintendent could force me to do so.
Yes.
Oh my God, reading those papers would probably kill me a slow death. But shout out to English teachers who read all that stuff.
I remember there was one point where I made a comment about that. I think it was several months ago, where I was like, you're pretty good with the grammar. You know a lot about the whole grammar thing. Like, it almost seems like you could have been an English teacher too. Or I might have made a joke like, what, were you an English teacher? I thought you were a math teacher. And then that's when I found out. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're ready for that one too.
By certification, I am an English teacher, right? Not in practice, but in theory. So
It all
math,
makes sense to me.
math always came to me easy. And then when I got lazy and the math got harder, it did get difficult. And I do say this about my students presently. Everyone hits a wall with the amount of effort they want to put forward and how smart they are and how far they can go. Sooner or later, you have to figure out, I have to readjust my how I'm going to approach learning this stuff. And when I was in a calculus class at one point, I saw a test coming up and I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this unless I get real thorough and learn every single thing about this. And when I did that, it was a, I was back online with being really talented. So in college, when I was taking upper level math classes, I had gotten to the point where I was regularly skipping classes because it wasn't even worth me to go. Some of my friends who may be reading this will remember that I just basically skipped and skipped and skipped, read the book, and did well enough on the test. And it was almost like an arrogant thing. Like, all right, if the professor's not going to teach me anything, I'll just learn it on my own. Screw him. So math kind of, I don't know, it was just a subject that came easy to me.
Yeah.
So I inevitably enjoyed the idea of being in a classroom, having fun with people who work at the same maturity level that I do, although I'm supposed to be an adult, and help them along the way, you know, with something that I'm good at. I mean, that ends up being what I did for a career.
You know, it's interesting hearing you say all that because as I've gotten to know you just personally, you know, since the classroom, math teacher's almost the last thing on my mind. You know, I think about like who
Oh, sure.
Larson is and what he's into. And I think about the music, I think about the writing, I think
Yeah.
about the movies and all these other creative projects. And there's so many other things to Tim Larson. And then it's kind of like, oh yeah, he's a math teacher. That's right. He was my math teacher. And it's, I think it shows that, yeah, you're good at it, but it's not your identity by any means. And
Yeah,
you're
well,
right about that. And I can see that as I've gotten to know you now, like, oh yeah, that's.
this is going to come up later, so I'm going to say something quickly about this and then back off because I don't want to spill the beans for our project here. But for a long time, there's a pendulum swing in education of whether teaching is an art or a science. And presently, the pendulum has swung more towards teaching being a science where it's data driven and it's, you know, follow the statistics and stuff like that. And I will finish, I started my career this way and I'll finish it this way saying that I'm an artist. I'm in the classroom to be an artist. I'm in there to foster relationships so that I can get the information across, not the other way around. And that I'll just say that for now and we'll definitely talk about that later.
Yeah, definitely. Let me ask you on that note though. As far as subjects in school, maybe not science, but like, did you excel at physics? Did you ever take a physics class or? Because I mean, that's basically math as it is. It's science themed math. That's all it is.
I hate science so much I can't even explain it. I'm sorry to all my friends who are science teachers. I in high school we were supposed to dissect a frog, and I was like, it's a bunch of goo in here. I don't know what you're expecting me to find. And they're like, find the yellow thing. And I'm like, I'm colorblind, man. It's just a bunch of goo. I don't know what the hell you're. So I failed all that. Chemistry, I could handle the math, you know, because chemistry is very mathy. There's a lot of equations. But you put me in a chemistry lab, I set shit on fire without even trying. And like, I couldn't tell what chemical was what. And I was terrified that I was going to blow up the lab at any time. And then physics, I failed in high school.
Really?
That's the thing is a lot of the math majors when I was in college, going to be a math teacher, there was a lot of there was a big group of us going through similar math classes. And some of them were going on to be engineers, and a lot of us were going on to be teachers. Most of the math majors were science minors. And so they would talk about their physics classes and their chemistry classes. And I was like, fuck that, man. I'm taking an English class. I'm over here talking about the romantic era of poetry, and these guys are talking about some kind of project that's really difficult. And I was like, no, thank you.
That's so interesting because I took a lot of echo school and just ultrasound school in general, and I think really just medical imaging is physics.
Okay.
And so,
Sure.
more recently in the classroom, several years ago at this point, but I was taking a lot of physics and especially the ultrasound physics, and that part of it I just kind of get. I talk to a lot of fellow sonographers all the time that are just, oh, I hated physics so much. Oh, I don't want to have to think about physics. And there are times where I think the physics helps me make sense of things,
Okay.
frankly. Like it just, it actually improves my ability to do my job because I understand it a little more. It's like, I think that part's great. Not when you get too far into it, but like just generally, it kind of put everything together. And that would be my, if you were going to ask me what physics was in a sentence, like, it's just science themed math.
Okay.
And that's essentially, so that's, oh, that's so interesting to me. I understand not liking science overall, so that makes sense. But yeah, so that's senior year. You're kind of just, like you said, your line was you'd rather be somewhere else. Junior year, you're more interested, more so than what's going on the board. You're interested in the attention of a girl named Lisa. So you mentioned Lisa a few times, in this entry. Tell me about Lisa.
It's okay. Full disclosure, similar to you saying that you were on a plane to Hawaii when the truth is you were sitting in a laundromat, Lisa's not a real person. I made her up. I completely made her up. But she's kind of a metaphor for me. Just absolutely as a priority over school, chasing girls the entire time. And not being very good at it, to be honest. Through high school, I was not very successful at dating. I was better at it through work, where there was a whole lot of us that from several different schools had been there. But yeah, that was a constant thing for me was, you're finding your identity when you're 15, 16, 17, and 18. You're really finding your identity being somewhat independent from your parents. You're getting out of the house, you got a car, you're hanging out with people that you're getting to know on your own terms as opposed to who you met through your family. And that was really important to me. It was important to me to be what's the proficient at being social. And so I worked hard at that. And so I was more focused on maintaining relationships with friends and meeting new friends and dating and stuff like that than I ever wanted to be at that point serious about academics and college and future goals. And so Lisa is just kind of a it's almost a cartoonish, comical take at where my focus was, as opposed to where it probably should have been. But I'm not really upset with myself about it. It worked out in the end.
Yeah, it's perfectly normal at
Yeah.
that age. You know what I mean?
How could I have ever snagged Nikki without all that practice at trying so unsuccessfully to gain the
There you
attention
go.
of young women at the time?
Exactly. Although being around the two of you enough now, I totally see why you two are married. I'm like, yep, I get it. Like, that's just this fits.
Right. Yeah. Two screwballs in a fishbowl, as one band has put it.
Anything else you want to say about the blog?
I enjoyed writing this one. I think, like you said, this one kind of, you read it and it resonated with you. I enjoyed writing this one. I remember writing it. I remember sitting on my couch. The first part is true. It was too late at night to start it. And I was just kind of feeling it. And I went, you know what? I'm going to be tired tomorrow. No big deal. And I didn't have an outline. I didn't have a plan. I started writing it and I didn't know where it was going to go. I mean, that's the truth. And you can kind of feel that one because at the end, I'm like, hey, I thought I was going to write about this, but that didn't work out. But it's definitely heartfelt. I'm reaching back into why I am the person that I am. And so it's retrospective. And a lot of those memories for me are really good memories. And so it's a good thing. This was a nice process for me. Like it was good to go back and see things that, didn't really work out the way they were supposed to, or that I was encouraged to have things work out that way. But in the end, everything worked out pretty good. And so this was a really nice cathartic look at, how I got to where I am. So I enjoyed writing it a lot.
I enjoyed reading it. I thought this was one of your best ones too. When we were in kind of the editing phase and things were kind of raw, I know this is one that I sent back to you saying like, hey, there's a lot that we need to like work with. I'm like, we're not there yet,
Sure.
but just the core of this is gold.
Yeah.
And yeah, and once I think once we put the finishing touches on it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is phenomenal.
Yep.
You just said that you had,
For
yeah, go
example,
ahead.
I had no intention of writing about Aunt Kitty when I started writing this thing. I was talking about myself as a young man thinking about going to college. And Aunt Kitty just popped up in my head and I just wrote it. I just wrote the line, for God's sake, Aunt Kitty wanted me to be a priest. And I was like, I can't take that back. Like,
Right.
I mean, I could take it back. I could erase it, but I thought, well, that came out. So we're going to talk about Aunt Kitty now, I guess. And I'm so glad that we did.
Me too.
It's a really great thing to do as an old man, as I am in your eyes, to be able to reflect all the way back to that and think, let's throw out a little nod to Aunt Kitty, because she deserves it. Mom deserves it. Dad deserves it. I am here because people believed in me, like I said.
Everybody should have an Aunt Kitty.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I would go my way, and I would do my own thing. Don't you know that for me, that means everything?
All right, so that was Why Am I Doing This? Written by Tim Larson. A
Yep.
lot of fun talking about that one. I had a blast reading it. I'm glad you wrote it. Tim, why don't you tell us what we have on tap for next week?
All right. Yeah, this was a fun conversation. The next one is your entry. This will be episode number 7, blog episode number 7. And I can't wait for this. This one's called Crash Tyson. And man, I pushed you so hard to write this, and you hesitated so much. I remember from that first day that we talked, as we were trading stories back and forth, you told me this about stuff from work. This was just stuff from work that is just funny, and it doesn't fit anything we've been talking about. Like, we're background this and background that. This is just a fun story about you being at work, and I'm just looking forward to it. It's just a nice little bit of comedy, which is some of the fun stuff that we've been doing. So I'm not going to say
Tim,
anything
what?
about the story at all. I just want to say next week we're going to hear a fun story from Mike about his work environment.
Tim, why don't you say in just one line, one simple sentence, what happens next week?
I'm going to say the best part is you got punched in the face.
Yep, that it's
That's coming.
it I'm still not sure, we're in almost 3 years into this. I'm still not sure what to think of the fact that that's your favorite thing that I've told
Yeah.
you.
Well, I
I don't know how
mean,
to feel about that still.
maybe favorite's a big word, but I pushed you really hard to write this one, and
Yeah, you enjoyed this one a lot, and
there's some people reading this
yeah.
stuff that like making fun of you. They're gonna enjoy this a lot.
Yes, very much so. In fact, there are probably some people that don't like me that would probably enjoy this as well. But at the end of the day, I really it was pretty funny. No harm, no foul, as they say. All right. Well, hey, thank you everybody for joining us for this week's 15 Years Later podcast. Just a reminder, you can read the blog at 15-years-later.com. That's a numerical 1-5 with hyphens. You can email us at 15yearslaterblog@gmail.com. And we've changed our Instagram handle. So now you can
That's
follow us
right.
on Instagram at 15 Years Later Official. So
Fish.
Instagram and Threads is 15 Years Later Official. Twitter will still be 15 years later TM because I couldn't change it, and Twitter's kind of dumb. But follow us on Instagram or Threads, or if you really want to, Twitter. And then leave us a comment, send us an email. We love hearing from you. We'd love to respond on the show. And once again, just a big thank you to everybody for following along.
This is fun for me, man. I'm enjoying doing this with you. I really enjoyed talking about my family and stuff today, and what a great time. Looking forward to the next one.
Everyone should have an Aunt Kitty.
Have a great day, everybody. And we are partnered with the SPDM Crew Podcasting Network.